It's the law of the land. The more valuable an object, the more likely someone will make a counterfeit copy of it. This leads us to ask, what's in those pills?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 499th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Quebec City who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, if you watch the nightly news, you'll notice there always seems to be good news in medicine. A new pill for cancer, a new cocktail of pharmaceuticals to stave off AIDS, a new drug to thin the blood, and another one to thicken it. The price of this good news, of course, is not cheap. An AIDS cocktail, for example, might cost as much as the mortgage on a new home. The value of these pills creates opportunities to make money, a lot of opportunities to make a lot of money, in fact. So this leads us to ask, what indeed is in those pills? And who better to ask than Catherine Eben, who is the author of Dangerous Doses. Catherine, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you aboard. Let me ask you this, Catherine. Are there real dangers in our medical food chain, or are you just throwing bombs to sell books?
Oh, there is absolutely documented dangers, which is that when you go into a trusted pharmacy and you're paying top dollar, believe it or not, there is the possibility that you can get counterfeits. And a number of patients have.
So when you say counterfeit, what exactly do you mean?
Well, by counterfeit, I mean that what is in the pill, what is in the bottle or in the vial, is not necessarily what's on the label, which means that a counterfeiter may have diluted, falsely appeared to have strengthened by uplabeling, or somehow manipulated the drug in some way so that it is not the authentic product. And they've done it, of course, to make a buck.
And there are lots of ways of doing that, so we're going to get into that a little bit later. As a writer, how did you come to investigate the drug trade? You spent a lot of time down there in Florida, and the result, of course, is your book, Dangerous Doses, which is now out in paperback. But how did you personally become involved in this story?
Well, I've been an investigative reporter for about a decade, and in the summer of 2002, I got a phone call from a longtime confidential source who was in the federal government. He said, you should look into why counterfeit medicine is landing on the nation's pharmacy shelves. And I'd really never heard anything like that, because for me, when I thought about counterfeits, I thought about Tijuana.
Right.
You know, Mexican drugs or internet
China,
drugs.
China, internet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought about buyer beware medicine, but this was completely different. He was talking about counterfeits that were entering the legitimate and supposedly safe drug supply.
So who was he now?
Well, that I can't say.
Well, but kind of what position did he play? I mean, how was he in a position to know that there was a story for you there?
Well, he had, you know, quite a bit of involvement in these issues, but his reason for calling me was because he felt the federal government wasn't doing enough to stop it. And once I delved into the issue, I could see his frustration, because very little had been done, you know, both by the federal government and by the states. And so
why not?
Well, that is some of the sort of political intrigue and backstory in the book, really because of lobbyists for the pharmaceutical wholesale industry.
Oh, okay.
Now, what do I mean? You know, most people, when they hear pharmaceutical wholesale industry, they don't even know that that exists.
Yeah, before we go there, Catherine, what kind of drugs are we talking about?
We're generally talking about brand name, often life-saving drugs that are very expensive, for patients who really need it.
You know, when they talked about very expensive in the introduction, I talked about, you know, how a regime of these drugs could cost as much as the mortgage on a new house. Was I being out there with that comment?
Oh, not at all. A drug like Epogen or Procrit, and these are costly liquid injectable drugs. They're biotechnology drugs that boost red blood cells. Those can go for about at least $500 for a single injection.
Wow.
So if you need to take that, once a week for a long period of time, depending on the house you're looking to buy,
exactly.
It could be a mortgage.
It could be a mortgage. And these are name brand drugs.
Absolutely.
That we're talking about, from name brand, reputable manufacturers. So this is not, you know, going back to your comments earlier, this is not something you buy in Tijuana. This is not something you buy on the Internet. This is not something that comes from China. What we're talking about are drugs that are coming from reputable manufacturers. And somehow they disappear, don't they?
Yes. And let me explain that, but let me also add, in addition to the very expensive drugs, counterfeiters also target big volume sellers like Lipitor. Number one selling drug for lowering cholesterol, that was so widely counterfeited in 2003 that 18 million doses of it had to be recalled.
Whoa. So we're not only talking about expensive drugs, but we're talking about huge volume of expensive drugs. So we're talking about the gross national product of Spain, right?
Probably. Yeah, huge money.
Huge money. Dangerous doses. How do they become dangerous then? I mean, we're talking about name brand drugs from name brand manufacturers. That take us into the process and how these drugs became dangerous doses.
So most people think that their pharmaceuticals move directly from the drug manufacturer and show up in the pharmacy. They think of it as a very controlled process. But actually, the opposite is true. Once the drugs leave the manufacturer's loading docks, they move through this network or gray market of middlemen. Wholesalers, distributors, repackagers who buy and sell the drugs, often buying and selling to one another in a process that resembles an all-hours auction, each one marking up the price in order to make a profit. And finally, after your drugs may have moved through a dozen hands, they wind up in your pharmacy.
As a writer, how did you approach researching this story? I mean, once these drugs disappear into this vast netherworld of middlemen, I mean, how do you track that? That would be kind of like tracking the distribution of illicit drugs, correct?
Absolutely. And in fact, I found that the two processes really resemble each other. And in fact, narcotics traffickers, seeing an opportunity, have gotten into the distribution of legitimate pharmaceuticals. So what I did is, because the FDA says it does not regulate the drug supply. Once it leaves the manufacturer's loading docks, it's up to the states to regulate it. So I went in search of one of the biggest investigations on the state level, which happened to be in Florida. And I went down there and I met these five ragtag cops, detectives, and drug agents who had formed this task force. They called themselves the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and they were investigating counterfeiters. And my book tells the story of their investigation.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw some of this on 60 Minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do they track this illicit network? I mean, how do you keep track of all of these things when people put these illicit drugs into their trunks of their car and drive them across town and put different labels on them and sell them to somebody else, and away it goes?
Some of these investigators were in charge of regulating the drug supply. So they were the guys who would drive up to these licensed wholesalers and say, we're going to search your warehouse. We're going to see if you're complying with state laws. Now, here's what's incredible. The Bureau of Statewide Pharmaceutical Services in Florida had an application form for anybody who wanted to be a pharmaceutical wholesaler. And guess what the requirements were? You had to have an air conditioner, a lock on your door, and you had to put $900 down, and you could become a licensed pharmaceutical wholesaler handling life-saving drugs with no educational experience, no background in this. And then they asked the applicant the question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And the felons checked the no box, and the Bureau never did any criminal background checks. Consequently, convicted narcotics traffickers were becoming pharmaceutical wholesalers.
There you go, folks. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Catherine Ebon, Dangerous Doses. Do stay tuned right back after these messages.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, look in your medicine cabinet. You probably have a fortune in drugs in there, and the price of those drugs have been going up and up and up, and of course, the more valuable those drugs become, the more likely somebody is going to be to counterfeit them and put them on the market and make a lot of money. And I guess it's probably not unlike the illicit drug trade, where we restrict the supply and the demand doesn't change, so the price of the product goes up and up and up, and we're kind of doing that with our illicit drugs. Is there any legitimate comparison between the two industries, between legitimate drugs and illegitimate drugs, Catherine Ebon?
Well, if you ask some narcotics traffickers, they'd probably tell you that you can make more money distributing pharmaceuticals than you can narcotics, and if you get caught, the criminal penalties are a lot lower.
How do the traffickers in illicit drugs become involved? Right before the break, you were talking about how easy it was to get a license. Do they just go down and get a license and open up a little warehouse somehow and jump into the trade? Is that the deal?
That's exactly how they do it. Now, if I'm a corrupt pharmaceutical wholesaler and I want to make a profit, here's what I do. I want to buy low and sell high, the ultimate American
Amen.
Principle. Now, how do you buy medicine low and sell it for a profit? Well, here's one clue. You get it from bad people. You can buy it from counterfeiters for a huge discount, and it won't be real, but you don't care because you're a businessman. You want to make some money.
Okay, when we say counterfeit, we're talking about drugs that are not drugs.
Well, they may have some of the active ingredients,
okay,
or they may be a low dose that's been relabeled to look like a high dose.
So there's all kinds of different ways. I want to get into that a little bit later then.
Kinds of different ways to have a counterfeit.
So you just buy it low from somebody who's selling it low.
That's right. Now, if you were reputable, you might ask, well, why am I getting this discount? What's wrong with this medicine? But unfortunately, a lot of people were not asking that question.
And why should they? Because they're getting it cheap, right?
That's right. Now, some of these, where are these drugs coming from, these cheap drugs? Some of them are coming from Medicaid clinics. Patients who have had their medicine dispensed, they walk out of the clinics in Miami. There are guys who work for wholesalers sitting outside in their Hummers and BMWs, and they're offering the patients a couple of 20s for their medicine. They take the medicine back to their warehouses. They clean them. They remove the patient dispensing label with Ronsonol lighter fluid and Goo Gone paint remover. Then they've got drugs that look like new. Even though by law they can't be redispensed, they've already been dispensed. And they resell them. So basically, you want, as a wholesaler, a flow of cheap medicine that you can resell for a profit. And what was happening, which my book exposed, was that the nation's largest and most reputable wholesalers...
Of which there are only three, right?
Three major pharmaceutical wholesalers. Mm-hmm. There's lots of regional ones. But three big guys.
Three big guys.
And what these companies did is they established trading divisions. And the job of those trading divisions was to scout for cut-rate medicine on the secondary market. So this was substandard medicine that they were getting for cheap. And they were selling this to pharmacy chains all over the country.
So the reputable firms were involved in this too?
Absolutely.
So they would go out and find cheap drugs from irreputable people, buy the drugs, and then put them back into the medical food chain.
That's right. Now, on the face of it, there may not have been anything, quote-unquote, obviously illegal about this because they were buying from licensed wholesalers. But once you consider that the licensed wholesalers were narcotics traffickers, you begin to get the picture of a very corrupted supply chain.
Why is it that, you know, in thinking about it, when you see a situation where there are only three manufacturers or three wholesalers who are controlling 90% of the market, doesn't that kind of give rise to the opportunity for all of this other scamming on the side? Because how are three supposed to cover everybody?
Well, I think you could make the argument that the consolidation has contributed to the
just
problem.
Just a pure consolidation.
Yes. There are thousands of, well, maybe not thousands, hundreds of regional wholesalers. You know, somewhat smaller, but still big companies that also distribute. But the problem is that the business model was totally warped. Everybody was buying this mystery medicine from secondary wholesalers who had no business selling it, or they should never have been licensed in the first place.
Why is the, and of course really what makes all of this incredibly lucrative is the cost of medicine, and surely that's something that you addressed in considering this story, Catherine. Why is the cost of these medications so incredibly high? Why is the cost of this red blood cell enhancer $500 a shot?
You know, it's unfortunate, and some of these pharmaceutical executives say basically the price reflects the value to life. It doesn't even reflect the cost of making the drugs.
So if you need it more, I mean, if you need it to stay alive, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
There have been pharmaceutical executives who have said publicly that that's how they determine their pricing.
That's cold.
It is cold.
That's cold. Ooh.
It is cold, especially if you're uninsured and you need this medicine.
Whew. So why can't they charge less and sell more?
I would argue that they could and that they should. You know, it's ironic because so many people in this country think, well, we pay the most for our medicine of anyone in the world, but we have the safest drugs. And what they don't realize is that, to some extent, our high prices have attracted counterfeiters.
Well, absolutely. The more valuable something becomes, the more likely it's going to be counterfeited.
Right. So if you were a counterfeiter, would you want to move your product into the American market or into the Bangladeshi market? There's no contest.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about how these drugs, these illicit drugs, these perfectly sound products that come from perfectly reputable firms become altered or become counterfeited. What are some of the ways that this is done? First of all, of course, we talk about counterfeiting. What exactly do you mean by counterfeiting, Catherine Eubin?
Again, it's that what is on the label or in the vial is, that what is in the vial or in the pill is not what's on the label.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then there are a number of ways to change the drug. You start with an illicit drug. What are some of the ways that are used to create counterfeits?
Well, let me give you an example from the Horsemen and one scheme that they uncovered in Miami. There was a fellow. Now he is facing trial right now for alleged counterfeiting, and here's what he's accused of doing. He got hold of 110,000 vials of low-dose Epogen and Procrit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a low-dose vial, a little vial, costs about $25. Okay? He had a printer in Florida make up counterfeit labels that made it look like high-dose Epogen and Procrit, 40,000 UML. That took the price from $25 a vial to about $500 a vial.
So just change the label.
Yeah. And he did this with a total of 110,000 vials for an estimated profit of $46 million.
Whoa.
This, okay?
So
big money. Now, let me say one other thing, which is this medicine is very delicate. It's temperature sensitive.
We're going to have to, Catherine, we're going to have to hold that. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Catherine Eubin, author of Dangerous Doses, What's in Your Pill? Though we're not taking phone calls today, you can always reach us on the web at on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. We will be right back with Catherine and Dangerous Doses and What's in the Pills in Your Cabinet. Right back. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. It's the law of the land, folks. The more valuable an object, the more likely someone will make a counterfeit copy of it. This leads us to ask, what's in the pill? Catherine, before the break, we were talking about a $47 million scam perpetrated by a fellow who just took the labels off one drug and slapped a new label on and put the... Was he able to put this stuff right back into the medical food chain without anybody catching on?
Well, for a long time, yes. In my book, I retraced all the steps that this counterfeit medicine took to actually reach, it's tragic, a 16-year-old boy on Long Island who had just undergone a liver transplant and needed this medicine.
Give us a thumbnail of that process so we understand it.
So, according to the investigators, Jose Griot, who was the alleged counterfeiter, he up-labeled, that's the word they use.
Up-label.
Up-labeled 110,000 vials. Then he took it to some acquaintances of his who were owners of a strip club. And he sold it to them. One of the fellows who owns the strip club is a urologist. Okay? Now, this, as I was saying before the break, this medicine is temperature sensitive. It has to be maintained at the same constant refrigerated temperature.
We're talking about volatile stuff, temperature sensitive. Put it in a heated warehouse and lose the potency.
That's right, and if you shake it, you destroy the protein because it's a living protein inside.
Whoa.
Well, this stuff was in the back of a strip club stored in a beer cooler, okay? The guys at the strip club resold the drug to corrupt wholesalers. These were people who were licensed but were basically operating nothing but shell companies, you know, phony wholesaler companies. They resold the drug to other wholesalers. It moved through about a dozen hands in this nebulous gray market. It got sold to a wholesaler in Arizona, who then called up one of the big distributors, AmerisourceBergen, okay? And Amerisource, ironically, was one of the companies that had originally sold the drug but sold it as a low-dose Epogen.
And, of course, they're a legitimate manufacturer, everybody knows them, they're up above board, they sell this Procrit into the market, it gets shifted here and there, ends up in a beer cooler in a strip club, goes to a wholesaler, gets relabeled, and it goes right back to the manufacturer?
Well, no, not the manufacturer,
the
wholesaler. AmerisourceBergen is one of the nation's three largest wholesalers.
And they, of course, bought it because why? It's cheap,
because
right?
It was cheap. They were they thought they were getting a discount on high-dose Epogen.
Now, surely they're smarter than that.
Well,
I mean, surely they know that if they're getting a great deal, there must be something behind it.
You know, I mean, one of the investigators...
Catherine!
One of the investigators said to me, the price tells a story, and everybody knows what the story is.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with the drugs.
Yeah. And yet they bought it anyway.
They bought it. They sold it to CVS Pharmacy. And CVS on Long Island dispensed it to the Fagan family, who was worried about their kid, who was 16 years old and had just survived a liver transplant. And so he got injected with, when he needed the high-dose medicine, he got injected with the low-dose medicine,
that had
been exposed to all kinds of, you know, temperature irregularities,
abuse, yeah.
Unsanitary conditions.
So, okay, this is thoroughly corrupt from top to bottom and back again. Well, quite literally.
Yes.
Quite literally top to bottom and back again. And what happened to the young man that took the medication?
Well, he survived, but each time that his mom was injecting him with this medicine, he suffered terrible spasms. And some doctors I've talked to speculate that it's because of the heat that the protein inside the drug had been changed. So he really suffered. And if you can imagine, he now has to take medicine. He has to take medicine for the rest of his life. So every time that he takes medicine now, he wonders, you know, is it real?
Is it real or is it fake?
And that's a horrible anxiety to live with.
Yeah. So here you have a process that was corrupted because of the price of the medication. What is Procrit again? How much did it cost, or a shot of Procrit?
It can be about $500 for...
So he needed the $500 dose, and
yes.
He was paying for the $500 dose.
That's right.
But he got a $50 dose that has probably worth $1.19 by the time it got to him, if that.
Yep, that's a good way of looking at it.
And suffered immensely because of that.
Right.
And will suffer for the rest of his life because of that. So, Catherine, you have a process that's thoroughly run amok. What did your investigators do to put a stop to this, or can they? I mean, what did they do to stop this? And this involves some very legitimate wholesalers. I would think that the tort lawyers would be jumping up and down with glee on this one.
There definitely were some tort lawyers involved. And, you know, there have been a number of lawsuits over different kinds of counterfeiting. I mean, there have been class action lawsuits over the Lipitor counterfeiting.
Right. Well, who do you sue? Do you sue the wholesaler?
It's a good question. They have generally sued the pharmacy, the wholesaler, and the drug manufacturer.
Oh.
But the drug manufacturers tend to be let off the hook in court because they argue we cannot be held responsible for the criminal act of third parties.
Yeah, which makes some sense, I guess.
And another interesting question I get is, well, why didn't, you know, the manufacturers don't recall these drugs? And they say, hey, it's not the drug we made. The drug that we made was fine when it left our loading docks.
And how can the manufacturers be responsible, I guess, when you sell it to somebody and somebody sells it to once somebody sells it to somebody else, what control do you have?
Well, they need to know their customers. And in fact, recently, for example, Johnson & Johnson has laid down the law and said to its wholesalers, its authorized distributors, if we catch you buying it from anybody else but us, you're cut off.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that's, you got to do that because everybody's responsible for the integrity of the supply chain.
Mm-hmm. What about the fact then that once you can only buy from us, then you have to pay whatever we're going to charge you? I mean, isn't there some kind of legitimacy to the second, this 10% that goes outside the normal channels, the three big wholesalers. Isn't there some kind of legitimacy there, too, some legitimate business that goes on?
Well, the secondary wholesalers would certainly say that, and they'd argue that they keep prices low for small mom-and-pop pharmacies and consumers. Here's that problem I have with that argument. If you walk into a pharmacy, you're not offered the special of the day, a discount on Epogen that may have moved through a dozen hands, that may have been in the back of a strip club.
Right.
You know, you're just offered one price. And you're getting that price whether or not it's gone directly from the manufacturer to one wholesaler to a pharmacy, or it's been in a dozen hands. So the consumer really doesn't get the benefit of this system.
Wow. Folks, you're listening to the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. We've got Catherine Eben, who is the author of Dangerous Doses, a book that has really had a profound impact on the medical food chain, the distribution of legitimate drugs from manufacturer to wholesaler to jobber to retailer to you. And in that process, a lot of corruption has occurred because of the very price of those drugs. So, you know, you've got to look into your medicine cabinet and think about what's actually in those pills that you purchased for so much money. Is it the real thing, or is it fake? And it's certainly a cause for concern and has been for a number of years because of the price of those drugs. The more valuable they become, the more prone they become to being counterfeited. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with Catherine Eben. I hope you stay tuned. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Catherine Eben, who is the author of Dangerous Doses, and we're talking about the counterfeiting of legitimate prescription drugs. And I guess those are the only drugs that are counterfeited, right, Catherine? Why bother counterfeiting over the counter medications when they're not very valuable?
Well, there have been some counterfeiting incidents of over-the-counter and also generic drugs, but my book is focusing exclusively on brand-name prescription pharmaceuticals.
So, and your book has had quite a profound impact on the medical food chain, like I was saying. What happened when you brought this book out?
Well, it was very
all kinds of fur flu, right?
Yeah, the fur flu. Ultimately, the thing I'm proudest of is that the nation's three largest wholesalers, Cardinal, McKesson, and Amerisource, all announced that they were no longer going to buy pharmaceuticals from the secondary market. So, you know, that was major. I mean,
So they're not going to go out and buy any more of the diluted drugs.
Right,
coming
exactly.
Back for
they're
good
only
deals,
going
right?
to buy legitimate drugs from now on. You know, now why they need public exposure to come to that conclusion, I guess that's sort of a sad commentary. But so that, you know, that had a big effect. And basically what you've seen is a real tightening of the supply chain and an increased awareness, which is that, hey, everybody involved in this needs to know where this medicine has been. Mm-hmm. And so very recently you've seen this FDA announcement that they're finally going to implement regulations that have been on the books for over 18 years and require pedigrees for drugs as they move through the system.
Ah, now, wait a minute. With respect to pedigrees, isn't it possible to counterfeit pedigrees like you can counterfeit everything else? I mean, when we're talking something that's worth up to $500 a shot, boy, you can counterfeit all kinds of different things around that.
Unfortunately, you're totally right. You can counterfeit anything, including pedigrees. But the investigators love pedigrees because it's like a fingerprint. It gives them a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what we need to have is an increase in criminal penalties so that it should be a felony to counterfeit a pedigree.
So what
and in Florida now it is, because the law, there was a sweeping overhaul of the law in Florida, and it was enormously strengthened, so now it's a felony to do that.
Why did you select Florida? What was it about Florida that makes it such a mecca for this kind of activity?
Well, let me say for starters, you know, that I didn't want to write some dry book about pharmaceuticals or counterfeiting. And I went down there. I had a meeting with these investigators who called themselves the Horsemen.
So you found yourself some characters, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They were wearing these black polo shirts with these Horsemen insignia on them. And I thought, who are these guys? You know, and it was like the gang that couldn't shoot straight. You know, they hadn't had a lot of luck before they'd all banded together. And here they were fighting the bad guys, fighting their own bureaus and departments with few resources and just a lot of zeal. So I thought, I want to tell the story of these guys.
Now, are there people like that elsewhere? Or
there are.
There are.
There are. I don't know if they're quite as colorful, but there are. Mm-hmm. You know, there are state investigations everywhere, pretty much.
Okay. Now, is this a situation that there are no federal investigators? It's a state-only thing, or are all the laws in all of the states different? Which, of course, would make it ripe for all kinds of shenanigans then.
No, there are investigators at FDA has a group called the Office of Criminal Investigations, and they investigate counterfeit drugs. So often they would be doing sort of competing or parallel investigations of the same counterfeiting incidents. You know, ideally they work together. In my book, I tell the story of a lot of tension at first between the two sets of investigators. But they were working on these cases and are working on these cases.
So they're working together then. And actually, there's a lot of people starting to look at this. But the thing that really gets to me is the fact that the legitimate wholesalers, the three giants of the industry, were actually guilty of buying back cheap medications. And they just had to know that something was wrong there. And did they ever check, did they ever examine, did they ever test those medications, you know, to see why they're getting such a good deal? I mean, this is something illegal dope dealers would do, you know? I mean, if you get a bag of white powder that somebody tells you is cocaine and they're going to sell it to you for half the regular price, well, duh, what's in the bag, you know? What's in the powder? So I just find it incomprehensible that legitimate giants, like the three that you mentioned, would have been purchasing cheap stuff and not questioning where it came from.
You know, they're looking to see if the drugs look legitimate. They're not doing any individual testing.
Well, what does a drug look like? I mean, it's a pill, right?
Well, in this case, the case of the Epogen and Procrate, it's a vial. But they're also looking at the packaging that comes with it. Are the boxes clean? Do they look like they've been, you know, resold on the street level?
Yeah, so they're not doing anything, in my estimation. Then they were just horsing around and looking for a justification. But I might be wrong. By golly, there might be some people that are thinking that there truly is such a thing as a cheap good deal, but scratch my head about that one. Folks, this is The Food Chain. We're working with Catherine Eben, who is the author of Dangerous Doses, and a book that has had quite a profound impact on the counterfeiting of real prescription drugs. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to wrap up with a question about what you and I can do to take those drugs with some kind of certainty. So do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. The Food Chain here. Michael Olson. We're talking with Catherine Eben, author of Dangerous Doses. Catherine, I don't knock wood here, of course, but I don't go to doctors and I don't take drugs.
That's good.
knock wood. What about you? I mean, you've looked at this industry in depth, and what do you think when you go to the medicine cabinet and reach in there for a vial, if you do? Can you take a pill with any kind of certainty?
Not really. I mean, I take medicine, and I always have the question in my mind of whether it's real or not. You know, partially, you want to see, is it working? And if it's working, or if it appears to be working, you probably have your answer that it's authentic. But I do have safety tips that I can share with your
listeners. Oh, please do.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me say they're listed on my website, which is dangerousdoses.com.
Got it.
Vigilance. When you take pills, take them in the light. Put them in your hand first. Don't just pop them in your mouth. And you want to ask, do they look right? Or is there something different about them? Are they the same shape, size? When you take them, do they taste the same? Same thing for injectable medicine. Does it feel the same going in? Are you having any burning at the injection site? Is anything different? Then you want to scrutinize the packaging. Does the packaging look the same? Now, if you have a reason to suspect that it might be counterfeit based on the side effects, based on the look of the medicine or the packaging, first thing you want to do is speak with your pharmacist. Pharmacists often will get alerts from the drug makers as to suspected counterfeits. So you want to double check with them to see if there's any reason to suspect that your drug might be counterfeit. Often a pharmacist will report a suspected counterfeit to the FDA or to the manufacturer, but I urge patients to call manufacturers with suspected counterfeits. Most drug manufacturers have a 1-800 number, customer number, that you can call, and they take these questions or complaints seriously. So they will test the drug. However, if you're going to, they'll often say, send us all your medicine.
Yeah.
And we'll send you back good stuff.
For $400 a pill, we'll test everything you have.
Well, one thing you don't want to do is to send them back all your medicine because it's the only evidence, if your drug is counterfeit, that you received it.
So the most critical thing here, Catherine Eben, is to really pay attention. Don't just go to the drug and dump it in your mouth and not think about it. Really pay attention. And that's pretty much true with just about everything we do. Catherine Eben, we thank you so much for joining us today. Author of Dangerous Doses, the website again?
Dangerousdoses.com.
So check it out, folks, and stay informed, because the more valuable something is, the more likely it is to be counterfeited. Thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.